The NRL 22 Championships this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to the Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to talk about the National Rifle League 22 Championships held this last weekend, August 22nd and 23rd, in Mount Pleasant, Tennessee at the Eagle Eye Shooting Complex. Now, this is the championship for the National Rifle League 22 series, which are monthly matches held at various different clubs across the entire country. So, those of you that are not familiar, the National Rifle League 22 matches are basically a postal match where every club across the country shoots the exact same course of fire that is published by NRL 22 the previous month. So, say for instance, the October course of fire is published in September, and then each club downloads the course of fire, and each match director at each club around the country sets up that exact same course of fire for their club to shoot. Now, the NRL 22 the club matches are designed to be very accessible. They're designed to be able to be shot in clubs all across the country with a minimum of resources and a minimum of space. So for the NRL 22 monthly matches, they're limited to 100 yards. You are limited to the base class equipment that's specified in the rules. You are limited to one piece of support equipment for each stage. Now, you can use a different piece of support equipment from different stage to different stage, but on a single stage, you may only use one piece of support equipment, and that kind of keeps things a little bit more compact. It keeps it a little bit more accessible to people that don't want to spend a ton of money on gear and equipment. The base class rifle is $1,050 total price for rifle and optic, not including rings, bipods, etc. So the National Rifle League Championships, now they are held once a year, and they send invitations out to each club based upon attendance for shooters to come to Mount Pleasant, Tennessee this year. It's held in different venues, different years, and shoot the championships and shoot against other shooters all around the country. Now, the classes are the same, so when you come to the championships, base class is still restricted to a gun and optic of a total of $1,050. You still have young guns, you still have ladies class, base class, open class, etc. The difference is the national championships. First of all, the equipment is unlimited on the stage. The individual stages will specify if there is a limit on equipment, but most of the stages, it was whatever you could carry to the firing position. So if you wanted to get absolutely wild and bring the kitchen sink, then you could do so as long as you could start with the gear in the position that the course of fire requires you to start with, which very often is standing with all your gear in hand. Now, the other massive difference between the championships and the regular matches is the championships shoot out to 368 yards for this year. So shooting a 22 to 368 yards creates some interesting difficulties and requires you to kind of rework some things. We kind of jumped through hoops at the end to get this rifle dialed in to be able to reach out to that distance, because the scope combination just would not give me the elevation to be able to dial out to that range. So those are things that you have to keep in mind going into the national championships. And this is all information that was put out ahead of time, so it's not a gotcha where you show up there and realize your rig isn't going to be able to do it. So because of the issues with shooting out to distance, my rifle that was normally set up to perform very well at 100 yards just really didn't cut it. And we talked a little bit about that in the last Mail Call Mondays. But what we settled on was the Athlon Midas Tac 5-25x56, because the scope does have enough elevation for me to actually dial out to that 368 yards. It also has parallax that allows me to focus in to 25 yards, because the closest targets are at 25 yards. So you have that 25 to 368 yard range where targets can be located in. You need to be able to see them clearly to be able to engage them. The Bushnell XRS-2 that we were going to try to use, just the 75-yard parallax on that is just a limiting factor. There was no way I was going to be able to do anywhere near as well as I wanted to do in this match with a scope that only focused down at 75 yards. So the Midas tack ended up working out for us. It has a 34 millimeter main tube. That combined with the worn mount and the Area 419 rail got us where we needed to be. Now we played with rail cants a little bit, and what we ended up was with the Area 419 30 minute of angle rail. Area 419 was awesome in actually being able to get this rail out to us really quickly. So thank you very much for taking care of us on that. Obviously, we have the rifle sitting, the T1X, sitting in the MDT ACC chassis, and MDT is a sponsor of the show, and they did send the chassis out to us a while back when we put this rifle together, so just letting you guys know, full disclosure on that. We also used the Warn bipod. This is the Warn Skyline bipod in addition to the Warn Skyline mount. So we have a couple of other goodies on here, a Sterk swept handle and ball, which is just a joy to use. Lothar Walther barrel on here. This is a heavy barrel, and we went through the whole deal with installing the barrel on this rifle. The barrel has been shooting fantastically now, but it took a little while to get things lined out there. And I do, you'll see in some of the videos, the muzzle looks a little bit weird here. Well, it's because I have a Sterk titanium thread protector on here. I chose not to run a suppressor. And the thread protector is significantly smaller than actually the outer diameter of the barrel. So some people thought I wasn't running a thread protector, I was just running bare threads. But no, there actually is a knurled thread protector on here. We are running factory trigger, and that is the gun overall. Most of the time, the shooting equipment I was using was the Reaser Precision Pint Size Game Changer. This is the waxed canvas version. This worked great for me. And then I was also using a Webad pump pillow as a secondary support pillow. As I mentioned, gear was pretty much unlimited in this. So I went ahead and took advantage of that. And most of the time I was going up to the line with a pump pillow to be able to just fill any gaps in my position if needed. So that is the equipment. We're going to get on and talk about the actual match itself. Now, the match was on a Saturday and Sunday, but registration was set up on Friday. And registration was all day Friday. So I went ahead and drove down on Thursday night, stayed in the hotel, woke up Friday morning nice and early, and headed down to the range and got registered. The NRL 22 Championships was set up really nicely. Eagle Eye Shooting Complex was nice enough to provide not only a zero range, but a long range as well, with steel targets set out, so shooters could get some experience shooting out to distance if they hadn't had a chance to beforehand. Remember that NRL 22 club matches are 100 yards and in, so it is conceivable that a shooter might be coming from a club where they weren't able to actually get their dope out to extended ranges before they come in. So it was nice that we had targets scattered all the way out to the longest distance that we were going to shoot. They were steel targets, and you could shoot and verify your dope. Now, I spent a couple of days beforehand, even before we get the scope really figured out, shooting out to distance to get the dope for the gun lined out. The Kestrel was just amazing. It's a Kestrel 5700 Elite that I was using for pretty much the entire match. That was my primary ballistic solution. And that combined with, I was able to use a magneto speed to get my velocity on this, plug that in. I was able to go through and use the custom AB curve for Lapua Center X, got that loaded in. And then I went through and did the drag curve customizing, the drag scale factor, and got the ballistics for the rifle really dialed in all the way out to almost 400 yards before I even got down there. So being able to grab the guns and go out on the line and shoot and verify all that data the day before the match really was nice. It got you dialed in. It got your head straight and you knew that you were good to go. For me, it wasn't a huge issue because I'm only driving 3 hours away to get to the range. Some of you guys drive that on a regular basis to get to your local ranges. But if you were coming from California or Oregon or Washington, like some of those guys, or way up in the Northeast, then knowing that you had a chance to actually get your gun on, make long-range hits on targets after it's been bouncing around in the belly of a plane or the trunk of a car for an extended amount of time, that's just nice. It's a confidence builder. So sign-in was taken care of, all that was taken care of. That was actually the point where I decided which of the two guns I took that I was going to shoot. So I had this rig set up, and I brought the Voodoo V22 in a MDT LSS XL chassis. Both guns were dead on when I got out to check the zero. Both guns were good to go with their long range dope. What it really came down to is that I'm more comfortable with the chassis that's on the Tika. They're both MDT chassis, but the feel of the pistol grip and the balance of the T1X was really what won me over on it. This gun is set up almost perfectly with the weight system on the front to balance just ahead of the magwell. It's still just a tiny, tiny bit tail heavy, but it's almost perfect. So when I throw the game changer across a barricade and then throw the gun on there and snug the chassis up to the back of the game changer, it balances out really, really well. So that really caused me to go ahead and select the Tika and roll with that. Now, looking back on it, I may have lost a few points with that decision, but you know, hindsight is 20/20, and we'll talk about that as we go through. Now, the decision was made on Friday to push the start time back on Saturday just a little bit because there was significant fog on the range Friday morning when they went out. I will give them kudos on that one because I have been to matches before where you wake up at the crack of dawn, you drag yourself out of bed, you drive in the dark to the range, you get parked, get everything out, you get staged, you get ready to shoot, and then you sit there and wait 2 hours for the fog to clear. So I'm happy that they were flexible enough to push the start time back to avoid that problem. When we showed up at the range, fog was clear. We got a briefing. We got ready to go. We broke up in our squads, and squad assignments were fairly simple. Now, this is a 20-stage match. We're only going to cover the first 10 stages in this video. We'll do a part two with Sunday's stages and a wrap-up. But the way they divided it up was very simple. We were squad 7, so we started on stage 7 as our first stage. Squad 8 started on stage 8, et cetera, et cetera. So that is really the most common-sense way to do it, and then you just moved on down the line when you were finished shooting your stage. So you always know where you're going next. You can very easily prepare for what the next stage is. So the first stage that we shot was stage 7, and this is called Rifle Uno. The time limit was 120 seconds. The round count was 10 rounds, and it was a 5-plate Know Your Limits rack at 50 yards. It was 10 points per impact, and you could use any equipment the shooter could carry to the firing position. Start position is standing at the table. The rifle is grounded at the firing position, magazine in, bolt open. On the start signal, shooter will draw one Uno card. The color of the Uno card will determine the target. The number on the Uno card will determine the shots to be taken at that target. If the shooter draws a wild card, the shooter will take one shot at the smallest KYL target. After the draw, the shooter will take a prone position and engage the target. Once the shooter fires all of their shots, the shooter will turn and draw another card. This will continue until 10 shots are fired. This was a fun stage, although a lot of shooters pointed out that it wasn't a very even stage. There was an element of luck to this. So luck of the draw decided how many times you were going back and forth between your gun and the table. If you drew a low number card, then it could take quite a few draws to get through until you got your 10 shots off. If you drew a high card, but a small target, now you're going to eat up a little bit of time because the target's moving. You got to wait for the target to slow down. So, I mean, it was really a mixed bag. It was fun, but it was not even across the board. Now, for me, I kept drawing red cards. So I had a medium-sized target, but I had to keep hitting the same target. And I could actually hit the target, go back, draw a card, get back on the gun, load the bipod, get ready to fire again, and the target was still moving. So I had to wait a little while for the target to slow down. And this actually ended up biting me and costing me a couple of points because I got down to the end of my time, and you could call time. They'll tell you how much time you have left, and I'm waiting for the target to slow, and it's like, that's it. I got to take it. I fired the last shot and slingshot underneath the target because I just didn't time the backswing correctly and missed it. So it cost me a point, but I came off the stage with 90 points. I was fairly happy with that, again, except that last little bit. Maybe if I would have gotten on the gun a little bit quicker and been a little bit smoother, reacquiring my target, then maybe I could have had a little bit of extra time for that last shot. But again, we can maybe this and maybe that all day long. Thankfully, I didn't get any wild cards. I didn't have to go for the smallest one because that, of course, eats up more time and you're only getting one shot on that card and then you have to go back and recover. Some shooters lucked out and they would fire a few shots on one target, a few shots on the next, a few shots on the next, a few shots on the next. And if you were really, really lucky when you got down to the end time, you would have a totally different, maybe you go back to the large target and get to hit that large target quickly before your time expired. So you could luck out. You could really get shafted on it. It just depended on how the cards were shuffled for you. But that was Rifle Uno. Very interesting. It's probably something that I will use again in the future, either for training, because it can be used mixed in with a Kim's type game, or just straight up the way it was shot here. So we shot that pretty quick, and then we moved on to stage 8. Stage 8 was NRL 22 Barricades on Paper. That was a 120-second time limit, 10-round count. Ranges and targets were a 1.5-inch NRL 22 paper target at 50 yards. It was scored on the scoring rings, and equipment is any equipment the shooter uses must be carried to the firing position. Start position is standing, rifle in hand, magazine in, bolt open. On the start signal, the shooter will choose their barricade and take two shots on the top 1.5-inch target. Shooter must shoot from all five barricades and take two shots per barricade and work their way down to each 1.5-inch target with only two shots per target. So you had to work down the target, two shots per target. The five barricades are barrel standing, chair back, ladder, 5-gallon bucket, and cinder block. Shooter may shoot from any step of the ladder. So for this one, the way it was set up was a little bit different from the way the stage described it. It was cinder block, chair, bucket, barrel, and then ladder. So the ladder was last, which was actually best for me because you can choose which direction. I decided to start on the cinder block because I knew the ladder was going to be the least stable position. Cinder block was going to be the most stable position. The gear that I used for it was, again, the pint-sized game changer, and then I used the WeBad pump pillow, and I went ahead and kept that with me because I knew I can just tuck it in to fill any blank spots. It took too long for me to locate the target, and that was kind of my own fault. I didn't get on glass beforehand and look at the array of paper targets and figure out where mine was in relation to the other targets before we started. We were assigned a shooter number, and you could look downrange and find your shooter number on the paper. But it's really a good idea to find that first so that when you get on magnified glass, you can get in there quick. On paper stages, I tend to use a little bit higher magnification because you have a very, very small 10x ring. So that 10-point ring, you really want to see and make sure that your wobble area is inside that ring when you break the shot. So took too long for me to get on my first shot. That resulted in me timing out with two shots left in the mag. Getting into position was not as smooth as I would have liked it to have been. Several of the positions were just fine. Getting on the chair was just fine. These are all positions that we've shot throughout the entire year on various courses of fire, so nothing was anything strange. And 50 yards, we're not dealing with dope, we're not dealing with heat, we're not dealing with any of that. If you confirmed your zero, you're good to go, then it should be a straight up deal. This is where the Tika started to show a little bit of an issue. I had shot a ton of ammo through this thing working up to it, and I really loathe cleaning before a match because a lot of times you clean the accuracy right out of the gun. You can actually induce all kinds of issues when you clean all the fouling out and you don't have a chance to refoul. I probably should have cleaned it before going to the match because I would have had a chance to foul it out on the registration day, but I didn't. So this barrel, I believe, is going to like to be cleaned a little bit more often than I'm used to with 22s. That is actually the information I got from Lothar Walther. So we'll see here going into the next week if cleaning it out gives me a little bit better consistency on that. But what I was mainly concerned with is chambering. The bolt started to get a little bit sluggish going into the chamber. So not locking down, but actually driving the round forward into the chamber. So that, again, slowed me down a little bit because on rimfires, it's really easy to crush and mangle those rounds. So when you feel things starting to bind up, you really want to roll over and look and see what's going on with the gun before you just start mashing on stuff. Again, these guns are not designed to take the abuse that centerfire rifles are. So a lot of things that you would do on a centerfire rifle, you're going to catastrophically destroy the gun if you do that on these rimfires. So I came away from that with 62 points. I did get a couple of 10s. Mainly, I think it was probably from the cinder block and possibly the bucket. The bucket was extremely stable because I could put the game changer across the top of the bucket sideways, get the gun on there, get everything dialed in, and have the pump pillow underneath my arm, bracing that empty space in my body. The cinder block was just pretty much a straight up prone. There's no reason to do anything other than prone on the cinder block. It's a little high because, again, I was using the game changer on the block, but that's easy peasy, good to go. So that was stage 8. Now we'll go on to stage 9. Stage 9 is playing card KYL. This was a 122nd stage. The round count was 13. Ranges and targets were a playing card paper target at 50 yards, and then an 8-plate KYL rack at 35 yards. The equipment is any equipment the shooter used must be carrying to the firing line. The points were 10 points per impact. Starting position is standing, rifle in hand, magazine in, bolt open. The description is all shooters in their squad will draw 5 cards. So you draw 5 cards off the clock. You got to maintain control over those 5 cards for the entire stage. On start signal, shooter will take a prone position and engage one of their 5 cards on the playing card paper target with 1 round. They will then engage the largest KYL target with 1 round, hit or miss. The shooter will transition from engaging their cards on the playing card paper target to the KYL rack from largest to smallest, 1 round each transition. Once the shooter has shot their final card target, the shooter will engage the remaining KYL targets, large to small, with 1 round each. So, this is the first stage where it's 13 rounds. Almost all of a regular National Rifle League 22 stages are 10 rounds. And since guns like the Tika have 10-round magazines, this one required a magazine change, so you had to be prepared to do that. Now, if you're shooting something like a Voodoo, where you have a 15-round magazine, or some of the other 22s where you can get magazine extensions or extended magazines for it, then you're good to go. You didn't have to do a magazine change, but I had to prepare for a magazine change. The setup on this, there were 2 targets downrange, 2 very large targets that had an array of playing cards on it. Now, thankfully, they divided the playing cards up so that you knew you were either going to be on the left target or on the right target. You were dealt five playing cards. I took my five playing cards, I fanned them out, I clipped them together with a binder clip so they were always open and I could look at them without messing around with them, without flipping through them. Because when I actually went up, I dropped playing cards on the ground next to me so I could look at them. That ended up not really being an issue because I was far enough down in the shooting order that I got on glass, I looked at the target, I was able to memorize on the target where each one of my cards were at. I went ahead and through my brain, I programmed in a shooting sequence on the cards. So I knew I'd hit a card, go to the rack, hit this. I would immediately come back to this position and hit this, and this position and this. It is much easier to look at the target and get the position of the cards than it is to remember number and suit. For me, at least, my spatial memory is a little bit better than just trying to remember numbers and suits. So that worked out pretty well for me. I knew exactly where everything was going to be at. I went through it and I actually ended up cleaning this stage. The trick with this one, again, was just memorizing the cards and then it was being smooth and transitioning back and forth. Now we're dealing with a paper target at 50 yards and a KYL rack at 35 yards. So depending upon where you decide to set your magnification, you might have actually needed to adjust the parallax. So I set my magnification at 15 power and I went back and forth between the parallax between 35 and 50 to shoot the various different targets. The reason I did that really was I needed a crystal clear image of the suit. And trying to differentiate between a spade and a club when the target's a little bit blurry on these things was not going to be a good thing. So I set the magnification to where I wasn't going to be critical on parallax, but then I worked the parallax back and forth between the two and got all my hits. So again, that one was really fun. It was really enjoyable. And I really, really didn't have any problems with it. Now the targets were offset far enough that you did have a little bit of a swing back and forth. So you had to be prepared for that. Now for me, I usually will swing with the buttstock and I will keep the bipod in place. I did see a couple of other shooters that did the exact opposite. They kept the buttstock in place and they swung the bipod. There are pros and cons of both. I find it more controllable to slide my body back and forth, but that is the greater distance to travel. Sliding the bipod back and forth, there's less of a setup there, especially if you don't put your body straight behind the gun after each reset, but it's also easier to overshoot and have to readjust. So I prefer to slide the buttstock side to side to get that transition between the two different targets. So that was stage 9. Now we'll go on to stage 10. And this was Atlas Targets Gone Hunting. And this was a little bit of a strange stage. So time limit's 120 seconds, round count was 10. Ranges and targets were one prairie dog target at 41 yards, two squirrels at 53 and 83 yards, two rabbit targets at 63 and 79 yards, one deer with a vital zone at 130 yards, and three deer targets at 155, 161, and 167, respectively, and then one turkey target at 199 yards. Points were 10 rounds per impact, but you got two bonus points for impact on the white deer vital zone. So the deer actually had a heart-sized vital zone painted on it, or I think it actually was a flapper. I didn't actually see it engaged. But an impact on the vital gave you an extra 2-round bonus. The equipment was a sling and provided shooting stick only. Now, this was on a tree stand, and it had a shooting stick with a V at the top of it going through the middle of the floorboard on the shooting stand. And then you could use a sling as well when you were on top of it. The started position is seated on the deer stand, magazine in, bolt open. On the start signal, the shooter will utilize the shooting stick to engage the prairie dog, the squirrels, the rabbits, the white deer with vitals, the deer, then the turkey target in that order. Engage animals from left to right. Shooting targets out of order may result in misses being called. Now, shooting them left to right was a little bit interesting because when I initially set up my dope card, I just went through the ranges and targets and wrote them down because we hadn't actually seen the stage yet. So I started with my dope card with everything written down. But as soon as I got over there, I realized that one of the target arrays was reversed. It wasn't near to far the way I wrote them down. It was far to near. So that took a little bit of doing. The tree stand was fine. The getting actually on it and getting the gun stable, that kind of was the trick. So you were on the tree stand before it started. You got the gun on the stick, and I ended up slung, and I drove the gun into the stick. So I loaded it pretty heavily, and it was not as stable as I would have liked it to. There was a lot of wobble on it. I came off the stage with 90 points, so I dropped a shot on the first deer. I knew it was gone. When I pulled the trigger, I watched it drop off, so there was really no question that one was gone. The turkey, I actually thought I was going to miss the turkey because it was really unstable when I got over to that position, and I was leaning way far over to get on that final one. And when I broke the shot, the crosshairs were moving, and I'm pretty sure I hit the turkey right in the little extended tail that it had coming down off the back, because I watched the crosshair leave the back, and I watched the crosshair dipping as the shot broke. So thankfully, I got it. That was one of those shots I really couldn't believe that I had made the hit, but it was very clear. I saw the plate move through the scope. I don't know what thickness these plates were, but 166 yards, that little 40 grain bullet still actually moved the target. So this was not my favorite stage, mainly because the tree stand was just really wonky. The stick was just not stable. I would not have chose to shoot that if I had any other options. So it was okay. I would have preferred to be able to go up there with my tripod and set my tripod up. But again, I realized that this is a competition and they do want to put you in difficult shooting positions to see how well you make do. We ended on that end. Now we had to move all the way back over to stage one. And stage one was Snake Charmers. Snake Charmers was 120 seconds. It was a 9-round count. Now you notice, again, we're not sticking with that 10. We're bouncing back and forth. Ranges and targets are 3 Snake Charmer targets at 75 yards. The points were 10 points per impact. And equipment is any equipment the shooter used must be carried to the firing line. Start position is standing, rifle in hand, magazine in, bolt open. On the start signal, the shooter will choose one of 3 barricades, barrel, lawnmower, wheel, or chair back to shoot from. Shooter will engage each target with 3 rounds from left to right. If the shooter misses, shooter will move to a different barricade and continue. Every miss results in a barricade move. Shooter must use all barricades before returning to the first choice barricade. If the shooter doesn't miss, the shooter is not required to move barricades. So this required a little bit of pre-gaming. The barrel, lawnmower wheel, and chair back. Again, the lawnmower wheel we haven't really shot from, but it's pretty much a wheel, tire, low bucket kind of setup. Initially, when I looked at it, I had considered going for the lawnmower wheel because it looked like dropping a full-size game changer in the center of the wheel would basically give me a beanbag platform that I could lay the fore end of the gun across. I could get a pump pillow on the back, and I could get almost a bench rest position with it prone and just rattle away on the targets. So that was initially my plan. And then I watched Jason McBride go up and shoot it. Jason is from the Missouri crew. The Missouri Misfits is what they put on their shooting jerseys. And we went out and shot with them before at the Bench Rest Shooting Club out there. And they're just an absolutely great crew, an absolute ball. But I watched Jason go up and I watched him set up, and he chose the barrel as his first option. And he just went bipod and rear bag on the barrel, set up on it like you would on a bench, got a good position on it, and then just rocked the stage from it. So I looked at that, thought, okay, that looks like the way to go. So I switched my plan mid-gear. I got up there. I had plan B set up on the lawnmower spool, but I realized that the full-size game changer that I was going to use was broken down a little bit. I borrowed Neil Burnett's full-size. We were kind of sharing gear between us, so we didn't have to all carry all of the equipment. And it wasn't going to give me the rise above the wheel that I wanted to not be resting the forend metal on metal and still trying to hit these little snake charmer targets. So I went ahead and rolled over to the top of the barrel, bipod, and then pint-sized game changer on the back. And amazingly enough, with the bipod all the way back here on the rail, I was able to just get a perfectly stable position on top of that barrel and then just absolutely drilled them. The snake charmer targets, we have shot them before at our local club. I actually own one. Basically what it is, it's a foam ball with a weight on the bottom of it that sits in a bucket of water. It has a rod on the top and then a steel target at the top of the rod. Now they use rather large buckets for this one, and all that was visible was the top of the snake charmer above the bucket. Now when you hit the snake charmer, it's unpredictable which direction it goes. Thankfully, however they set these ones up, they calm down pretty quick because, again, you've got three shots on each one. So there are three different targets out there, and you had to hit, 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 move, hit, 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 move, hit, hit, hit. The barrel was the perfect shooting platform because it's round, so you could fire on the first snake charmer. I got my three hits, and then when you rotate the gun, the barrel just rotates on its base over to the next one. And since they were all set in a line, it was easy just to rotate the gun to the next one and then fire the next three. Now, the real key with the snake charmer targets is wait until it stops moving. Do not try to hit it on the move because they're too unpredictable. So we saw how quickly they calmed down and how quickly they stopped. So you could afford the little bit of extra time with 120 seconds for it to stop before you hit it again. But I almost dropped my last shot because it moved, and I had watched it a couple of times before the shooters. It moved and then it stopped. And for whatever reason, after it stopped, it had just a little bit more movement in it to relax. And at 75 yards, that little bit extra movement can be a miss on a target that's only this wide. So I watched it. I prepped the trigger. It stopped. I got ready to break the shot, and I just did one more inhale, exhale, and it relaxed back, popped it, and that was my last hit. So I cleaned the stage with 90 points. And the snake charmer stage probably is one of my favorite. Thankfully, I stayed all on the barrel. I didn't miss any, so I didn't have to move to any of the other barricades, but you have to have a plan ready to move. So if you miss, you can't sit there and complain. You can't sit there and grump about it. You have to, as soon as you break the shot and you know it's a miss, move, because that time is going to cost you The miss is going to cost you points, but then the time is going to cost you to set up in a new position, get stable, and get going. And they were small enough that if you were not stable shooting off the back of a chair, you're not going to get your hits. So you had to have a primary shooting position, had to have an idea which one you were going to and how you were going to set up for your secondary. And then hopefully you would not have to get to a third position. But most shooters did excellent on it. But the little bit of movement on it could really, really screw you up. Then we moved on to stage two. And stage two is double spinners. I have not shot spinners a lot, so I really was a little bit anxious going into this. Time was 120 seconds. The range and targets were two spinner target systems at 60 yards. Points are 5 points per impact and 10 points per overcall. We'll talk about that in a minute. Equipment is any equipment the shooter uses must be carried to the firing position. Start position is standing, rifle in hand, magazine in, and bolt open. On the start signal, the shooter will take a prone supported position and engage either spinner with one round. Once a spinner target is impacted, the shooter will transition to shoot the other spinner target. Each impact is scored. Shooter must change between spinner target systems after each impact if the spinner If the spinner completes one full revolution from the result of an impact, over will be called and the shooter will be awarded 10 points. So the reason that was put in there is because there were cases where a shooter would push the spinner over and it would rotate a couple of times. So you only got the over call from the first rotation. If it continued to rotate before it was hit again, you didn't get extra points for that. But if you came down, caught it with another shot, and it went over again, you got another point. But you had to shoot the other one before you could come back. The round count was 10 rounds. That, for some reason, was not actually specified in here. We thought it was going to be an unlimited round stage, but it is actually only a 10-round count. And you have to move spinners, hit or miss. So if you miss, you don't get another shot. So if you're trying to get it to spin and you miss your shot trying to push it over, you can't fire another shot on that one. You have to go fire a shot over here and then come back to try to engage it again. When we looked at this, I don't know if anybody got the left spinner to flip over. The right spinner was pretty much the one that was weighted well to be able to flip over. So most shooters concentrated on shooting the right spinner. I only got 45 points on this. I never got it to rotate over, and I missed my second to last shot trying to push it over. So I tried to judge it where I needed to hit it. Again, I'm trying to hit it on the move, and I dropped a shot there. So dropping the shot hurt me, took 5 points away, and then not getting it to rotate hurt. That is really a stage. Shooting spinners is something I'm going to have to practice. We do have a spinner here at our local club. We used it for one match, and I did not do well on that one. So it's going to be something I'm going to have to practice. I need to reach out to them and find out who actually makes this spinner to try to practice this specific spinner again. Spinners are interesting. They're fun. Shooting anything that's moving requires some timing. It requires trigger control. There's a lot that goes into it. Everything that you do on the gun has to be subconscious. So you can just practice or concentrate on the timing and hitting the plate where you need to hit the plate to push the thing over. Again, shooting center racks, I'm shooting standard velocity ammo that is subsonic out of this rig. It's a 40 grain bullet. It doesn't have a lot to it. There was some talk about if shooting hypervelocity ammunition on that might be of a benefit. I haven't run hypervelocity 22s through this gun. That is probably something that I'm going to actually practice to see if I have to motivate a steel target to move. Is it worthwhile to know what my zero offset and what my dope is with hypervelocity ammo through this to be able to just go ahead and switch over? I have seen through the CZ that I can switch between bulk ammo and match ammo and not have a point of impact deviation when I go back to the match ammo. I haven't tried that with this gun, so if this one holds true, then I wouldn't really have an issue with switching ammo in the middle of a match and switching back when I need to go to the precision stuff again. But it's something I haven't tried. Not a good thing to try in a match. It's something that's going to take some homework back here. So that was the double spinner stage. Next, we had the vertical TYL. This was kind of an interesting thing. It's 120 seconds, a 6-round count, so not a lot of ammo here. Ranges and targets are a 4-inch target at 100 yards, 5-inch target at 125, 6-inch target at 150 yards, 8-inch target at 200 yards, 10-inch target at 250, and a 12-inch target at 300 yards. It was 16.67 points per impact. I don't know why they did that. I forgot to ask before I left the match. It really seems kind of wonky. I'm sure somewhere in calculating the scores, they decided they needed to do a really weird deal here. Maybe they wanted to make sure that you got extra points for hitting going out. Equipment is any equipment the shooter used must be carried at the firing line, but really this is a prone position, so it's rear bag, bipod. The start position is standing, rifle in hand, magazine in, bolt open. On the start signal, the shooter will take a prone supported position and begin engaging targets with one round from near to far. If the shooter impacts a target, the shooter will move to the next target. If the shooter misses a target, the shooter will stop and keep all accumulated points. So this is a test your limits. It's not a know your limits. So once you miss, you're done. You keep your points. This one bit me, and I really have no idea why. This was kind of the start of the what is going on here. As I said, I confirmed my dope. My dope was good. I had actually shot every single one of these targets on Friday, getting everything lined out. They were out there for the zero and or for the dope confirmation, and I went through and shot them all beyond 300 yards. So I got on the gun, got down behind it, fired my first shot, hit my 100-yard target, and then I missed the next target. The only thing I can come up with is I didn't take the extra time to make a wind call. I broke the shot. It was a complete miss, and as soon as it was a miss, I transitioned from looking at the target to looking behind the target to try to see where the shot went, and I had noticed that the Mirage had laid over completely. Right before I started, when I looked downrange and made my wind call, everything was on a boil. When I got on, hit the first target, I didn't notice anything strange, went to the second target, and it had apparently kicked the wind up. As soon as I stood up, I felt it, but I didn't take the extra time, and with 120 seconds and 6 targets, there's not really any excuse for me taking the time to stop, look at what the Mirage is doing, and then break the shot. So that one cost me. I came off the stage with only 16.67 points. But, you know, so be it. Most of the shooters didn't have any problem with this. Even our young guns really rocked this stage. But that is a lesson that hurts. So it's not one that I'm likely to forget again in the future. And sometimes those are the best lessons, the ones that hurt and the ones that ingrain themselves. So be it on that one. Although we weren't done with the hard lessons either. And I think that one climbed into my head a little bit because the next stage was near to far. And this was stage number 4. And it was 120 second time limit, 10 round count. And the ranges and targets were a prairie dog target at 92 yards. Half-size deer target at 184, and a full-size deer target at 368 yards. The points were 10 points per impact, and the equipment was any equipment the shooter uses must be carried to the firing position. Again, it's pretty much a prone stage. Upon firing start signal, shooter will take a prone supported position on the platform. Shooter will engage the targets from near to far with one shot, hit or miss. Shooter will then engage the prairie dog with 2 rounds, half-size deer with 2 rounds, and the full-size deer with 3 rounds. So this one, the shooting position was on an elevated platform, but it was a full flat like sheet of plywood. So you could get your entire body on it. It was a very stable platform. It was bipod and rear bag. Pretty much everyone shot bipod and rear bag. So when we went up, the RO briefed that they were really having trouble spotting the impacts on the 368-yard target. There was a pretty good breeze going, so pretty much everyone was going to get the points for the 368-yard target, hit or miss. So some shooters didn't even bother to shoot at or dial their dope to shoot at. You still had to break a shot. If the gun went bang, you got the points. If the gun didn't go bang, you didn't get the points for it, because obviously your bullet couldn't have hit if the gun didn't go bang. I decided to run it straight up and actually dial and try to hit it. So my first run, I ran through, hit the prairie dog, hit the half-sized deer, and then hit the full-sized deer, no problem at all. Now, the thing is, the 368 target with even 10 mils per rev on this scope, I was on the second rev to hit the 368-yard target. For whatever reason, maybe it's because I've been shooting center fire flat shooting rifles long enough that I'm not usually on the second rev, I did not dial all the way back to my zero stop before I came up again to my next dope. So I just dialed back to what I thought the dope setting was for the half-sized deer and pressed the shot off. Well, I was actually 10 mils off of that. So no idea, no impact on it. Fired again on it, no idea, no impact. And I ended up continuing that until it finally dawned on me when I came down to the prairie dog target what I was doing. So all in all, I think I dropped four shots on that because I was on the wrong rev. I ended up coming off that stage with 60 points, and I really, really felt stupid. I've preached to people before, make sure you dial your dope off, make sure you come all the way back to your zero stop. That's why we have zero stops. I've just been shooting on the first rev for long enough that I didn't even think about, hey, I didn't turn that turret far enough. Coming back, it needs to go all the way back. So 120 seconds again for 10 shots is not too little time to buzz the turret all the way back until you hit the zero stop and then come up. So should have done that. Hurt bad. Between those two stages, I pretty much knew that my shooting match was over. I was not going to finish well between those. Both hard lessons, and it was even harsher because my entire squad cleaned that stage. Every single other shooter on the squad cleaned the stage. I was the only one to drop any points on it. So again, that one hurts pretty bad as well. Now, coming off that, I was a little upset, but then we moved on to stage five. And stage five is Bill Mickey, American Farmer and Maker of Movement. This is a moving target stage. So time limit on this was 120 seconds. Round count was 12 rounds. So again, I'm running a magazine change. And ranges to the targets, it was a 2-inch square target on a Bill Mickey moving gallery at 45 yards. And this thing is really cool. So it's basically a big rectangle on the ground, and it has rectangle targets or square targets that are on like popsicles. And when you hit them, they would fall down, and you had to make it fall down to actually get credit for the hit. And then as they go around, they would reset and they would come back up on the other side. So you always had at least three or four targets to try to shoot. So it was a pretty cool setup. The points were 10 points per impact. Target must fall for impact to be called. Equipment is any equipment the shooter uses must be carried to the firing position. Start position is standing at the table, rifle grounded on designated position, magazine in, bolt open. On start signal, the shooter will roll three Rubik's cubes to determine their shooting position on the six-stair barricade. The color shooting rolls on the Rubik's cube will determine the color position on the barricade. Example, if the shooter rolls green, blue, and red, the shooter will shoot from the green step, blue step, and red step. The shooter will pick up their rifle and then take two shots each from each color cube designated position on the barricade. Shooter will then ground the rifle in the designated start position, roll the three Rubik's cubes, and return to take two shots from each cube color designated position on the barricade. The shooter must make the 2-inch target fall on the moving gallery for the impact to be counted. So, stair-step barricade, you had three cubes, two Rubik's cubes, and then one was wrapped with tape because it was probably falling apart. You had to roll the cubes and then shoot from the stair-step from the designated positions. So, if you could conceivably roll all the same color and then just have to stay on one step. Usually it didn't happen that way. And we noticed as we were going through that the RO would call the colors out to you. So what we very quickly figured out is instead of wasting time looking at them, you would just basically roll them blind and grab your rifle, and the RO is calling the positions as you're moving into position. So it saved quite a bit of time. You didn't have to look at it and figure it out. And the RO would usually call the colors in the order that they were on the barricade. So you didn't have to bounce back and forth between colors. You could shoot them in the order left or right and not run into a problem there. The moving target, it was something else because we were going into it not really knowing where the lead was going to be. It's 45 yards, so time of flight really is not that much on this. The movers looked like they were moving at a pretty good clip, but we started to notice our squad was really good about communicating between us. Nobody was hoarding information. So we figured out through the first couple of shooters that leading edge was the right hold. Break on the leading edge, and you generally had a hit. So I went through, used breaking on the leading edge. I got 90 points out of it. My misses were late shots. So anytime I missed it, I just broke a little bit too late and got too deep into it and didn't get my hit. So it's really fun. I really like this little moving gallery target. It's kind of cool. It's kind of like something you would see at the fair, shooting the BB guns where you've got the little ducks that go across and you got to knock them down. It's a little bit more interesting when you're running a bolt gun and you have to get the gun stable. And that really was one of the key things, is getting the gun stable. And again, the game changers were great for that. Pump pillow on the back, that kind of ended up being the theme for the match, was game changer and pump pillow. And the last stage for day one was positional paper. And again, we came back to the paper stages. And thankfully, the weather held up for us. We didn't get dumped on at any point. We kind of had intermittent clouds, and everybody was watching the radar. So it was going to be interesting to see what happened with the paper stages if we just had an absolute deluge like we did on Friday during some of the zero sessions. But stage six was positional paper. Time was 120 seconds, and it was 10 round count. Ranges and targets were a 3-inch NRL 22 paper target at 50 yards. Scored is scoring on the scoring rings. Equipment is sling only. Start position is standing, rifle in hand, magazine in, bolt open. On the start signal, the shooter will take two shots at the left 3-inch target from a standing position. Shooter will then take a kneeling position and fire two shots at the left 3-inch target. So four shots on the left target. Shooter will then move to a seated position and fire one shot at each 3-inch target. So that puts your fifth shot on the left target and your first shot on the right target. Shooter will then take a prone supported position and fire the final four shots at the right 3-inch target. So you would have 10 shots on paper total. Five shots on the left, five shots on the right, and that was all they were going to count. So if you screwed up and put different shots on different paper, you're only getting counted for the five shots that you put on the paper. This was not terrible. It was a straight up unsupported stage. There were no shenanigans though. No Hawkins position where you had a hand underneath the forearm to the rifle and the buttstock on the ground or any of that. It was legit. No part of the rifle, to include the bipod, could touch the ground when you were in the prone position. You couldn't take up any equipment that would anchor the rifle to the ground. It was just basically a sling. I was using a Tab PRS sling on this. I still need more practice with the Tab PRS sling, but it actually worked pretty well, and I used that as well when we were transitioning long distances between stages because it's very easy just to sling it over and carry the rifle. I was carrying bringing a Eberle stock low drag scabbard pack, but I really didn't ever put the rifle in the scabbard. I just kept it slung moving between stages. So I really didn't dig this. I got no impacts standing. I was just way, way too unsteady. I believe I got one good hit sitting, and I got all my prone hits. My prone shots were really good. So I came out of that with 38 points, a couple of 10s, but the rest of it was just kind of garbage. So that wasn't exactly the greatest end, but I kind of knew paper and sling supported really is not a good combination for me. I always need to practice more with a sling, and I don't really like shooting with a sling. I've been professionally instructed on how to do it. I've shot M16s with slings for years and high power style shooting. Marine Corps KD courses started out with the loop sling back in the day when I first went into the Marine Corps. That transitioned into the hasty sling later on. But Marine Corps qualifications were always with a sling. So it's something I'm used to. It's just something I don't shoot. I'm getting older. Rifle is heavy. So again, it's not enjoyable. Most shooters get out there and did just fine. There were a couple that chose just not to use a sling at all. That's kind of interesting. I'm going to have to try both ways, sling and without sling. There's really no question in my mind that slung supported is going to be better than no sling, especially when you get down into kneeling and sitting. You can just put so much tension into that sling to drive the gun back in and lock everything in tightly. I don't think you can do that as tightly without the sling. That was one of the reasons my prone was really good, is because once I got down and prone and pushed those elbows out, it tightened that sling up and really pulled it back into me, and I was good to go. The chassis was kind of nice because the ACC chassis, I've got a quick release or thumb screw here, and I can drop the butt plate down, which gives me a much better seat in my shoulder pocket for standing. I can really adjust this thing however I want to dial it in, but you're limited on what you can do when you're shooting all of those positions, because once you start dialing in too much for one position, you start dialing out for another position, and that can cause issues. So that was the end of first day. We had hit or miss cloudy weather. We had a little bit of sprinkling rain here and there, but most of the time we were either undercover or it was enough of a sprinkle that it was just a little bit of a break from the heat. Overall, the ROs were just absolutely amazing. All the shooters in Squad 7 were awesome. Nobody had any kind of attitude. Nobody was really causing any issues. Every now and again, you go to national level matches and you get people that just feel that they have to exert their inner asshole for some reason, and there was none of that. I saw none of that from anyone at this match. Everybody was joking. Everybody was having fun. Even when you came off a stage and you really, really screwed it up, it was fun to joke about. It was good natured all around. All my guys from Missouri, it was a ton of fun shooting with them. Again, it was a ton of fun. We will go ahead and break this video here, and we will come back to you with day two and with the results of the finale in the next video. So if you guys have liked the video, please make sure you click like, share, and subscribe. And make sure you click that little bell icon down there to get notified when we release new videos. If you have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, drop it in the comment section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. And until next time, get out and shoot.